Well, we're so glad you're back with us here today at GoldSeek.com Radio. In today's Gold Nugget segment, our special guest, James Turk from Gold Money. Well, our featured guest says that gold is in backwardation, at least recently, and the last two times that occurred marked the beginning of a powerful multi-year bull market rally, actually two of them. It's a pleasure to welcome James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com and author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It. Welcome back, James Turk.
Thank you, Chris.
You know, the topic of gold and silver backwardation has caused a lot of confusion, I think. You'd probably agree in the gold crowd. You know, backwardation in the metals market is just counterintuitive, where investors are willing to pay more today than in the future for gold. So despite the storage costs and related issues and fees, investors are desperate for gold right now. Now, you point out that this is a rare occurrence that has only happened two times since the bull market began in 99, and each prior occurrence lasted only a few days. This time, it persisted much longer. Roughly 2 months were backdated this time around, as opposed to a day or two, maybe three, in the prior two instances. It seems as though something big might be stirring behind the scenes there.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. You know, you bring up the point, or you brought up the point about there being a little bit of confusion about backwardation. There are really two types of backwardation. There's backwardation in commodities, which happens quite a bit. And then there's backwardation in gold, which is a very, very rare event. You know, to view it properly, you have to accept the notion that gold is money. And it is money because it's accumulated. Gold's usefulness comes from the ability to use it in economic calculation. In other words, measuring prices over long periods of time. And because gold is a tangible asset, it doesn't have any counterparty risk. In other words, it's not based on some bank's or some government's promise. It has a very different risk profile than any national currencies. And because it has a different risk profile, it has a very low rate of interest. And as a consequence of that, gold is always in contango, which is the opposite of backwardation. In theory, gold should never go in backwardation because an arbitrageur will come and sell the spot and buy it back in the future at a cheaper price, as you mentioned. But because it didn't happen for such a long period of time, the only thing we can conclude from that is that at you know, prices that prevailed in the summer, there was a shortage of physical metal. And just like there was back in 1999 and 2008, the other two times there was significant backwardation. And both those moments led to a big rally in gold. I think we're going to see a big rally in gold here. But, you know, time will tell. You know, I'm a believer that, you know, you just keep accumulating it every month because this is a major bull market that's got a long time to go before it plays itself out.
You also point out that a shortage or tightness of supply in gold can only be relieved from the existing above-ground stockpiles. The only way for that, of course, to happen is for gold price or the gold price to rise high enough to entice people into exchanging their physical metal for dollars, which is what we did see the last two times that gold was backward dated. Do you think we're seeing that unfold here as well?
Yeah, another point that's related to this backwardation we had in the summer, you know, the low was over 3 months ago. We've been in a slow but steady uptrend over the past three and a half months since the lows were made. And I think that's quite significant. You know, I don't think people are paying attention to, you know, the fact that gold is, you know, basically being accumulated and being accumulated on a steady basis. And it's been forming a huge base, and it's typically a base like this which will cause the gold price to rise. Now, there have been some interesting events taking place. Obviously, the debt limit is an issue. I do believe that the debt ceiling is going to be increased, and when that happens, it's probably going to unleash a flood of new money printing from the Federal Reserve, particularly since we have a very dovish Federal Reserve chairman coming in a few months. So, you know, we're going to see more quantitative easing, more government deficits, more debt, and more debasement of the dollar, which ultimately means, you know, a higher gold price. The higher gold price has to come out of a backwardation because, in contrast to paper currencies, which could be created in an instant by a computer stroke or a bookkeeping entry, you know, gold comes the hard, old-fashioned way by, you know, hard work mining it and bringing it in above ground. You can't create it out of thin air. So the price has to rise to entice people who presently own gold to eliminate the backwardation. So, yeah, any way you look at it, Chris, from a tactical point of view, that you know the low was made 3 months ago and we're in an uptrend. The fact that we're forming a huge base, you know, all my measures indicate that gold's cheap. You've got the news out there, which is very gold positive. I'm pretty optimistic here as we move toward the end of the year.
You know, that's such an interesting point. In the final analysis, I mean, gold is not like grain or cotton or any other agricultural commodity. It has a finite amount. I mean, there is only so much gold and silver in the world. Very labor and energy intensive process extracting and refining the ore.
Exactly. And the other thing, Chris, is that in contrast to these other commodities that you mentioned, those commodities like grain and soybeans and crude oil, they get produced, but then they're immediately consumed and disappear. Gold, on the other hand, is the only thing we humans produce that is accumulated. And all of the gold mined throughout history still exists in its above ground stock. That's what makes gold as money. The fact that it is accumulated. We hold it in different forms. It's fabricated into bars. It's fabricated into high carat jewelry. It's fabricated into coins. But regardless of the reason, regardless of how it's fabricated, the reason that you hold it is always the same, because it's money. It's a store of value. It's preserved purchasing power for thousands of years, and it's likely to continue to preserve purchasing power in the future, come what may, in terms of central bank actions or central planning actions with regard to the dollar or any other currencies around the world. So it is the go-to asset at this moment in time, even though the price has been lackluster.
You know, you talk about gold being accumulated over history, and of course, just take a look at the year 1900. There was probably less than a billion people in the world. There's now seven times at least as many. If we look at the total money supply, just over the past 20 years, 20, 30 years, a factor of so many fold higher. So the gold remains, for the most part, constant and steady, whereas the number of people in need of gold and the number of dollars chasing gold has skyrocketed. One caveat, though, here regarding the backwardation concept before we move on. You know, the previous two did mark the lows and explosive bull markets did commence. But I'd like for listeners, before they, you know, run out and buy 2014 and 2015 options on gold and silver and make all these speculative moves. In 1999, it did require nearly 2 years before the bull market took off. And I think you could argue that the reason why it required so much time after the backwardation event, well, there were so many skeptical investors following many years of disappointing action in the markets. And it takes us to 2008. As soon as the backwardation came to pass, it really marked the lows and we took off to the race as well. Folks had regained a lot of their confidence and were less skeptical regarding the markets. And I just wanted to throw that in there. That doesn't necessarily mean we will see new highs, let's say, in the next year or two.
Yeah, and you raise another important point, Chris, that you know, there are two types of gold. There's physical gold, which is a tangible asset. It doesn't have counterparty risk. And then there's paper gold. And paper gold is a financial asset, and it comes with counterparty risk. And there are various types of paper gold. You know, there are options, there are futures, there are ETFs, there are, you know, pool accounts or certificates. You have to ask yourself, why are you buying gold in the first place? Are you buying it because it's a safe haven? Well, if it's a safe haven, then you want to own physical gold because it doesn't have counterparty risk. But if you're buying it to try trading and profiting from fluctuations in the gold price, well, then you can look at paper gold, you know, futures, ETFs, options, or whatever. But, you know, that's an entirely different game. And what I talk about when I talk about gold is physical gold and, you know, why people need to acquire physical gold, because it is a safe haven. It's an important diversifier in everyone's portfolio.
You know, another interesting way to view the market, I think, is through the consumer price index. And if you juxtapose gold against gold, must climb at least 4 to 5 times to roughly $5,000 an ounce just to meet that 1980s inflation adjusted peak. And I know that many subscribers and listeners and readers are aware of this. Even this lofty target that doesn't compensate for the much higher debt levels and greater demand, not to mention access to the metal in 2013 as compared to 1980. Any comments?
No, it's some good observations, and it sort of makes me think here about the circumstances that we're in. You know, I really think we're resting on a knife edge. You know, confidence in fiat currency backed by nothing except government promises, is a very fragile thing. And we know from monetary history that in many, many countries around the world, that confidence in currency backed by nothing can vanish essentially overnight. And when it does, at the end of the day, your position is going to, your financial position is not going to be measured in how much currency you have, but how many ounces you own. And I think, you know, really that's where we're heading. You know, it's this debate over the debt ceiling, you know, Chris, that, you know, the debt ceiling is there. It's supposed to impose discipline on the government to quit, you know, borrowing and borrowing and borrowing and then having the Federal Reserve buy all that government debt and turn it into currency. You know, that is the path to currency debasement and ultimately the path to hyperinflation. We're seeing the currency debasement because of inflation and the fact that the dollar doesn't purchase the same thing it purchased a year ago or even 6 months ago because of inflation. And, you know, we're on this path, and we have to get off this path to go back to sound money. And in the assumption that governments are not going to get off this path, we, each individual, have to be cognizant of the fact that we have to take those steps to protect ourselves and our family. And the way to do that is to diversify your portfolio in as many ways as possible, and owning physical precious metals, be it gold or silver, is an ideal way to do that. It's got the historical proven track record, you know, 5,000 years of history of money. It didn't stop being money 40 years ago just because the president said so. It continues to be money, which is why things like backwardation are very, very rare when it occurs. You know, gold has an interest rate, just like dollars have an interest rate, and gold interest rates are always supposed to be lower than dollar interest rates. But because of the interventions we're seeing in the market in so many different areas, including interest rates, you're getting all kinds of unusual things developing, but ultimately we're going to go back to basics, and gold is going to be at the center of commerce, in my view, once again.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned diversification. The only free lunch, it's been called, in the investing world, that asset class that balances portfolio betas, a recent correlation matrix, gold against equities. And it turns out that gold is almost 75% negatively correlated with the New York Stock Exchange, even more so than the S&P 500, which surprised me. You can't own a stock without owning some gold. If you do, well, you're jumping out of the plane without a parachute.
Yeah, I liked your, I saw your chart and I liked it a lot. And I think the point you're making is a very valid one.
And I'd also like to discuss your long-term silver chart indicating a large parabola. 35-year overview shows that $50 peak in 1980 against the recent $50 or so peak in 2011. One of the most reliable patterns in not only engineering but throughout finance is the head and shoulder. And this just looks, I think, eerily similar to a reverse head and shoulder, one of my favorite bottoming patterns, very reliable, and it's quite prevalent in the markets.
Yeah, I describe it as a big accumulation pattern, and there are different ways you can describe that accumulation pattern. Head and shoulders is one way of doing it. I tend to use the description of a cup and handle. You know, the cup was made between the 50 back in 1980 and $50 back in 2011. And what we've been forming now is a little handle. And when we go back above $50, that base will have been complete. And then, you know, we head much higher from there, just based on normal technical analysis. But, you know, again, these things don't happen overnight, which is why I keep going back to my basic premise. You know, just keep accumulating physical metal because we're in a major bull market. Don't get shaken out by the noise or the ups and the downs, you know, this week or that month or whatever. Just play it from a long-term point of view and fit precious metals within your portfolio as an important diversifier.
I think it's well said, and I'd only add one little point here. But one of the neatest aspects that I think some analysts overlook is that these patterns have a wonderful tendency to give you a forward estimate of the next peak. So, for instance, let's say that we're looking at $4 low on silver, and let's say a $50 high. Well, if we take the neckline there on the cup and handle or the head and shoulders, I mean, you can extrapolate forward roughly $46. And that gets us in the neighborhood of $100 per ounce. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the zenith of the bull market. That would be a target level for folks to maybe assume that things have gotten a bit frothy. These precious metals markets have a tendency, if we look back over the last 100 years of economic data, to just go parabolic and never look back. Weimar being, I guess, one of the best examples, one mark cost exactly $1 in 1916, 1917, and by 1923, the mark devalued by $1 trillion per gold coin. As we wrap up here, one quick note. Janet Yellen, of course, has accepted the head of the Federal Reserve position when Dr. Bernanke steps down in 2014. And I wanted to see if you had any comments on this event, particularly in how it may relate to the precious metals markets and the fact that Dr. Yellen is known as being quite dovish in her stance on monetary policy.
Yeah, I've read a lot of the material about her background and, you know, some of her comments in various FOMC meetings. And, you know, I agree with the consensus view here that she is very, very dovish. But, you know, back in 1971, when the dollar's link to gold was broken, we went in the wrong direction. We're paying the consequences of that now. And the Fed is stuck. You know, the Fed is on the treadmill, and it's starting to, move faster and faster, and the, being dovish, Janet Yellen is going to move even faster still, to try to keep interest rates down, try to revive the economy. But it doesn't work. What you need to revive the economy is less government involvement in the economy, less central planning, less control of interest rates. What's happening now, this zero interest rate policy, you're destroying capital. You're destroying the backbone of society, which is the middle class, which is where the capital is accumulated in a sound money system and where the production and hard work, you know, really appears or is illustrated. And because they're destroying the backbone of capitalism with these policies, the only people who are benefiting from it are Wall Street. And this is ultimately going to lead to disaster. Not unlike what happened to the first currency of the country, the Continental, which collapsed because it wasn't backed by anything but government promises, too. One of the reasons why the framers created a new the Constitution is to basically establish a sound money, and gold and actually silver initially, and then subsequently gold. Gold and silver were the backbone of it, and it worked well until 1971. We're experiencing now the same policies, the same problems that the framers of the Constitution experienced with the Continental. It's quite tragic. And, if you read the Constitution, it's quite clear. You know, Congress has the ability to coin money. It does not have the authority to print money. The framers must be spinning in their graves given the monetary system we have in this country today.
Madison and Jefferson would say, "Do you not recall we both warned of precisely this?" They'd be astounded at just how long, spanning from 1971 now, I guess we're going on 42, 43 years that this experiment with fiat money actually survived and thrived. I think they'd be surprised that we made it this long. Please tell folks more about goldmoney.com.
Yeah, gold money is a great way to buy and store precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. We have 23,000 customers, almost $2 billion of customer assets that we're safeguarding, which is stored in vaults in five different countries: Canada, the UK, Switzerland, Hong Kong, and Singapore.
Very good. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.